So in short, I'll get into more of the details later, but the Nashville Mobile Market is a nonprofit social enterprise that takes the form of a mobile grocery store that goes into the food deserts of Nashville. And I have nothing to disclose. So just kind of a basic introduction to the issue. The idea kind of came when Ravi Patel, who is now a fourth-year medical student at Vanderbilt University, was working at the Shade Tree Clinic, which is a free health clinic in East Nashville. So he would have dozens and dozens of patients coming in suffering from chronic illnesses, which we know are, you know, continually on the rise in the States. And so a lot of them would complain, you know, doc, you tell me to go have more fruits and vegetables, but I can't. I don't have fruits and vegetables in my neighborhood. The corner store on the corner doesn't sell them. How am I supposed to be eating healthier? And so after doing some research and asking around all throughout the food advocacy network in Nashville, Robbie, you know, quickly realized that a lot of these patients he saw actually lived in food deserts. So, basically, what is a food desert? Essentially, I'm sure you guys have heard lots of different definitions, but this comes from the USDA. But it's essentially a lack of a full-service grocery store, supermarket, selling things like fruits and vegetables, basically things that are needed for adequate nutrition. And then it's often accompanied by an overabundance of fast food restaurants, tobacco stores, corner markets, alcohol stores, places that you're not going to find the things that you need to have a proper diet. And within that, access is defined in three different ways, physical, financial, and educational. And I'll touch on all three of those later. In the USDA's report to Congress in 2010, they stated that 23.5 million people in the U.S. lived in food deserts. So it just gives you an idea of the big scope of the problem, both nationally and city-specific. And so just to bring it all back to Nashville, to Tennessee, and then, you know, on the public health side, one in three adults in Tennessee actually suffer from type 2 diabetes. And then if you compound on top of that, the most of these people actually live in the areas that are considered food deserts of Nashville, and I'll show you a map later. But it means that these people suffer from type 2 diabetes and then aren't able to get the food that they need to adequately control and manage that disease. So here's the map of the Nashville food deserts, as specified by the USDA. The thing about food deserts is they're always changing. New stores pop up, other stores close. And so this is from 2009. So we like to point out that there are basically three main food deserts in Nashville. There's a little pocket over there in East Nashville. There's a pocket, it's hard for me to point without an arrow. There's one in South Nashville, which we call the Edge Hill community, which is geographically the smallest food desert in Nashville, but the most densely populated. And so that's a big area of target for us. And then obviously you can see the North Nashville food desert is the largest geographically, but again, it's a little less dense, and there's a lot of industrialized factories and things up there. So not as many people live in that area, but it's the largest food desert by size. So like I said, there are three barriers and three types of access, the physical, financial, and educational. So the first one is the physical, so just not actually having a grocery store in your neighborhood, or maybe there's one in your neighborhood, but you don't have a way to get to it, and that could either be a mobility issue or a transportation issue. And so there was a study that showed that the physical barrier to accessing a supermarket can actually reduce fruit and vegetable intake by 32%, which is pretty significant considering. And then there was another study that showed that adults in neighborhoods that had a supermarket actually had half the obesity rate of those who lived in areas that only had convenience stores and did not have supermarkets. So the real question is whether that access is in fact leading to those differences in prevalence rates. And so again, just to put it in perspective in terms of Nashville, there are 16-plus thousand Nashvillians who live outside a mile of a grocery store within range and then have no car. So essentially, they're probably not going to be walking to the grocery store, so they'll have to use some other form of transportation. And as you'll see there, in the South Nashville neighborhood of Edge Hill, a study was done in the summer of 2009 to show that 70% of residents don't use their own transportation. So basically means they're using a bus or paying a friend to take them. So these are some images to give you an idea of kind of what a food desert might look like. As you can see, there's a lot of gas stations, a lot of, like I said, discount beer and tobacco stores, alcohol stores, convenience stores. There was that 12th South Avenue market. It has closed since then. So again, gives you an idea of things that might be changing. And trust me, when I went into that store, there were not fruits and vegetables. And if there were, they were not of high quality. So the next barrier would be the financial. So that's just not being able to afford to eat healthy. And so that can kind of, again, take on multiple forms and just shows you the different factors that go into a thing like food access. But it could be that the produce items that you need to be eating are too expensive or that you can't actually get there, be it you don't have a car, which is obviously a big capital investment, or you can't afford a bus or to pay a friend, like I said. And to go to the grocery store in Nashville, a lot of people who live in food deserts have to take the bus. So the bus round trip can range anywhere from $3.40 to $4.50, and that's assuming you're only taking one bus there, one bus back. You don't have to change buses, which is often the case in Nashville, which just the way it's set up, kind of like a wheel spoke. So you have to go out and hop on a different bus to go back downtown to go back out. And then, obviously, compound on top of that, the fact that you might have kids that you're also paying for. So you can see how that, you know, $3 and $4 can add up very quickly, especially for someone of low income. And as you see, the median household income for residents in Edge Hill is nearly half of what it is in Nashville as a whole. So that's pretty significant, especially when you add on the cost of transportation. So just kind of summarizing at the end that a trip to the grocery store can, in fact, become a really costly journey. Like I said, again, if you have kids or you're hopping on multiple bus rides or maybe you have mobility issues and all that, and say you do get to the grocery store, but now you have to come back with your, you know, six bags, you might not be able to buy as much, but you'll come back with your six bags and you have things like produce and dairy items and milk and eggs that might spoil on your trip home. So you have to always be conscious of that as well. Like I touched on earlier, if there are stores in your neighborhood, in your food desert neighborhood, they probably don't have the highest quality of produce. And so there was a study out of Minnesota in 2006 that showed that if these low-income food desert neighborhoods actually had stores that might sell produce, it tended to have higher prices and then lower quality as well. So a lot of the food might be spoiled. You might have brown bananas or rotten potatoes or onions. And then on top of that, the variety and the quantity of each item is significantly less than if you were to go to a Kroger or to a Trader Joe's or something like that in a non-food desert area. So essentially, a lot of these people who live in food deserts are sacrificing cost and quality for the convenience or for essentially being able to access the store. And that final barrier would be the educational. And this one's a little bit harder to define and is obviously going to take a lot longer to address just in terms of changing health behaviors. But it's a general lack of knowledge about adequate nutrition, what it looks like, how you get it, what you should be eating and what's adequate. Maybe a potential discomfort with food preparation, not knowing how to cook a specific food item. And then potentially the stigma of cooking takes too long, I'd rather just walk to the fast food restaurant down the street, or that it might be cheaper to do so. And then obviously there's a potential to just not be familiar with certain food items and not know how to use them. I like to tell the story of there was an 8-year-old that came on the market, goes, "What's this?" And I was like, "Well, show it to me, you know." And he pulls out a mango. Kid had never seen a mango before. And so I'm sitting there, and we kind of use those as teaching moments for us, for the volunteers that are on the market. But, explain what a mango is. Try in your best way. It might be kind of hard to someone who's never experienced it before, but explain what a mango is, and then talk about how it's good to eat fruits and vegetables and things like that. So definitely using, just being able to see a fruit and vegetable that someone is unfamiliar with and using that as an educational piece. And this last quote by the Rockefeller Institute is really something that is kind of at the foundation of what we do, but it's just saying that if the doctors of today do not become the nutritionists of tomorrow, then the nutritionists of today will become the doctors of tomorrow. So again, just relating back to that chronic disease prevalence issue that we're having in the States. So in the summer of 2009, Carmen Adams, who is now a graduate of Vanderbilt University Medical School, did a lot of food procurement surveys all throughout Nashville as part of her research project, and she worked in those three food desert neighborhoods that I was talking about in East Nashville, Edge Hill, and North Nashville. And she actually saw that there were basically four main barriers when people were asked to list the barriers of what they thought and what they perceived were barriers to food access. And so the big ones were childcare, transportation, time, and distance. And as you can see, Edge Hill was the highest, had the highest barriers to those as well, relative to East and North Nashville. Beyond that, she asked, how long is it taking you to get to the grocery store? Again, going back to that that physical barrier. And so as you can see, it ranged anywhere from less than 15 minutes for people in East Nashville, but upwards of 1 to 2 hours for people in Edge Hill. So again, when you're talking about milk and eggs, there's definitely the potential for spoilage as well. And, shopping with kids and then having them not be too rowdy on the bus home and things like that, it just adds to the complications. So again, just bringing it back to the public health perspective, but there are obviously higher prevalence rates of these risk factors like obesity, inactivity, high cholesterol, and smoking in these food desert neighborhoods. So the real question is, why are those there? Kind of which came first? Was it the food desert first, or were there these risk factors first that led grocery stores to close down because residents weren't buying fruits and vegetables? So just taking a look at that. And then obviously you can see as well that the rates of diabetes and hypertension are actually higher in those neighborhoods as well. So again, just bringing back the question that Ellen hinted on, but whether, you know, food access actually will increase fruit and vegetable consumption and thus lower things like obesity and diabetes and hypertension. So all that background is to say that when Robbie was hearing about these patients in the East Nashville Clinic, you know, he kind of said, okay, well, how can we, you know, solve this problem of food access? Seems like a simple question, and, you know, a simple idea. Let's just bring the fruits and vegetables to them. It's not quite that simple, but he went to a ton of community meetings, you know, public housing meetings, community partner meetings, family resource center meetings, and everyone would tell him stories about the market man from the 1940s and 50s. Essentially a guy who would drive around in a pickup truck in Nashville selling fruits and vegetables out of the truck. And everybody was like, Robbie, make this happen. Like, why can't someone else drive around now in a pickup truck selling fruits and vegetables? So he goes, okay, well, maybe. So Robbie spent that whole summer kind of developing a business model for the mobile market with not really any intention of making it happen, just, you know, I'm going to do my research project, show that the need's there. He did a lot of food procurement surveys, needs-based assessments, things like that. But we unintentionally got funding, which is great and does not happen, so we rolled with it. But our big objectives, just bringing it back to the three barriers, were to increase the availability and access, again, touching back on that physical barrier, to decrease the costs of healthier foods in food deserts, and that, again, includes things like childcare, which might cost money, and transportation, so addressing the financial barrier. On top of that, to educate the community members about healthy recipes and how to manage those chronic conditions that they have a higher prevalence rate of. And so that addresses the educational barrier. And then there were kind of two more added on, but to educate students and community members about potential community development techniques. So again, because Robbie was a student, and it's kind of the merger of a community-based initiative with an academic institution coming together, just figuring out how those two can relate with one another and, you know, make positive change in communities. And then obviously to determine the effects of access on food purchasing behaviors and then consuming. So if we bring you fruits and vegetables, one, will you buy them? And then two, if you buy them, will you eat them? So it's kind of a visual, because I know in theory a mobile grocery store is kind of a hard concept to visualize. But essentially it's a 28-foot car hauler trailer with a drop-down ramp in the back that people walk onto. And as you can see, there's that checkerboard floor. We really wanted to make it about feeling like you were in an actual grocery store. And so that was community suggested. And so, you know, we went with the checkerboard floor to make it really authentic. And again, you'll see on the shelving there's a lot of baskets of produce and things like that. So it's kind of like a farmer's market on wheels. But we really encourage shoppers to come in, feel the vegetables, smell them, pick the one that they like the ripest. Again, making it really like a true grocery store experience. So they walk up, and then there's a door on the side that they get out of. So obviously, to any program, there are going to be pros and cons. Some big things that we view as strength of the mobile market is lower costs. Essentially, what we are able to save by not making a big capital investment and building a grocery store in those neighborhoods right away, we're able to pass those savings on to the consumer. It is able to just essentially provide that service and bring fruits and vegetables into those neighborhoods. Again, and it addresses those four barriers of distance, time, transportation, and childcare. And then obviously there are going to be weaknesses with any program. It was a little difficult in the beginning to build customer trust and to really explain to people and convey to people why we were in the neighborhoods, what we were doing, why we were selling fruits and vegetables, and just really took some time for them to get, you know, used to us being there and trusting that we were going to be there beyond a month, a couple weeks, but that we were actually going to stay for years and years to come until they didn't need us anymore. And then obviously with any big trailer, you're going to have mechanical issues. So things like generator problems and tire problems and electrical and fire, we've had it all. But we've also overcome it all, so we know how to deal with it as well. But like I said, there are going to be strengths and weaknesses to everything. None of what we've done would have been able without our been possible without our community partners. Like I said, the stories of the market man and a lot of the initial input came directly out of the Edge Hill community. So it came out of the Family Resource Center. It came out of the Organized Neighbors of Edge Hill. It really came from the ground up. We definitely view this as a grassroots, community-based approach. But we do have some bigger players like MDHA, Public Housing, and Metro Parks, and the Mayor's Office, and things like that. And with that, we also have, you know, volunteers who come from Hands-On Nashville, and bigger, kind of more policy advocacy side, but we have partners like Community Food Advocates who really are hoping that, you know, we're going to get some data that they can then take and make really good policy adjustments. And then obviously there's going to be any, you know, there's going to be financial and operational support required of a project like this as well. We had a big startup contribution, like I said, the kind of unexpected funding from the Frist Foundation, which happened just about 2 years ago now. And then we had a renewed big grant to keep us going as we approach our second and third year from the Baptist Healing Trust. And then, like I said, we've had great support from the mayor's office, from public health, and then just being housed out of Vanderbilt has been a great support for us and ties us really back into the academic side of what we're trying to get at and to build that research base. So we launched in February of 2011. We started just in that Edge Hill neighborhood, only operating 3 days a week at 7 different locations throughout Edge Hill. We've since expanded to North Nashville and East Nashville, so now we like to think that we're targeting those 3 big food desert neighborhoods that we talked about. And we now operate 5 days a week for 40 hours total. So it's a full-time job for a couple different people. And like I said, we're now at 15 different locations all throughout Nashville on different days of the week. And we have 3 paid employees and 25 volunteer board positions, a lot of whom are students at Vanderbilt or Belmont or other universities throughout Nashville. Again, just bringing the community member side, but also the academia. So a lot of what we do can obviously, you know, we're kind of a moving research hub, as we like to view it. But we're hoping to gain that research data to show, hey, there should be a grocery store in this neighborhood because, hey, look, people are going to buy the fruits and vegetables that we're bringing. And again, just going back to those barriers, we really want to see if what we're doing is addressing the financial, educational, and physical barriers of food access. And so we did surveys in 2011 to show that 3/4 of people could get to us in less than 5 minutes. And before we existed, they recalled that only 13% of them could actually get to the nearest grocery store within 5 minutes. So again, kind of really addressing that time barrier. 3/4 of people were also able to walk or bike to us. So we kind of unintentionally increased physical exercise, which wasn't an intention, but again, we're all about it and we love it. Because beforehand, roughly only 30% of people could walk or bike to the nearest grocery store. So a lot of them were paying friends or taking the bus to get them there. And the biggest thing that we're most proud of is this reported increase in the consumption of fruits and vegetables, where we had 25% of the people shopping with us said that they increased their fruit and vegetable consumption because we were in their neighborhood selling fruits and vegetables, which is really, really awesome. And again, something that we're going to continue to hope to do. One limit of the surveys that we did is they were retrospective. So we did ask people, you know, before mobile market existed, how many fruits and vegetables were we consuming? Okay, now. So we'd really, our next step is really to do the prospective research. And before we go into a neighborhood, do the research, then go in and then follow up afterward. So with this, there's kind of a national side to what we do. Like I was discussing with Ellen earlier, there are actually different mobile markets that are popping up all across the nation. A few popped up before we existed, and then many since have, you know, kind of come to us and say, hey, how do you do this, you know, sort of thing. And so we have 2 big partners in Memphis and Atlanta who are doing the research right now to start their own mobile markets. And all this is to say that there are different factors that go into each food desert in each city. There are going to be different factors like transportation and cost and time and things like that that affect a person's ability to actually have the fruits and vegetables at their fingertips to be able to eat. So obviously, what we're doing works great in Nashville, and we're hoping that it works in other cities as well, but there might have to be tweaks that need to be made as well, just kind of as a caveat. Just some big financial highlights. We passed $45,000 in sales. This is a little outdated just because we haven't done the October sales, since they technically are still going on today. But we have passed $45,000 in sales, and that's pretty tremendous when people thought we were going to do something like this and no one was going to buy fruits and vegetables. But to say that we have been able to sell that much is pretty enormous. We've had over 8,000 customers, well, transactions, I'm sorry. It's harder for us to track individual customers just because we don't have like a little card that we scan every time. That's just an infrastructure that we don't have yet. But transactions, we've seen 8,000 people come through the mobile market, 8,000 purchases of fruits and vegetables and things like that, which is pretty great. And then obviously about a quarter of our sales have been EBT, which is food stamps. So that's a significant proportion, and obviously a lot of those people are the ones that are struggling with access and affordability of fruits and vegetables. What we do, obviously, is going to involve a lot of community outreach and a lot more than just the 28-foot space on the trailer. So we did work with the CDC through Nashville Metro Health to do the CPPW, the Communities Putting People to Work partnership. So we worked with the Healthy Corner Stores during 2011, providing fruits and vegetables at a wholesale price to those corner stores, again, to increase access. Because for us, it's not whether they come and get fruits and vegetables from us, it's just the individuals who need it are getting it. A big thing to do with our educational barrier that I was talking about earlier is the Community Kitchen Initiative, which we launched in the spring. It's a session every other week for about an hour. It's a little bit nutrition education, but a lot of, you know, involved cooking. And so that cooking, whatever, I think there are 2 to 3 recipes every week that are done, and those recipes are going to involve the nutrition education topic. So if the topic's low salt, the recipes aren't going to have that much salt. And again, just really breaking down that educational barrier and maybe that unfamiliarity with certain fruits and vegetables that individuals might have. And then we also have dietetic interns that come out with us every year from Vanderbilt that really help us make sure that nutritionally we're still providing the adequate nutrition that we talked about and that we really want to be implementing. And we have like free recipes and samples and things like that on the market as well. Again, just to really warm up people to certain fruits and vegetables. We have been featured both nationally and locally in Nashville, which is pretty exciting for us. We were featured in the HBO Weight of the Nation documentary, which came out in the spring. And we've also been featured all throughout Nashville, which is really exciting. We just won Social Enterprise Startup a couple months ago in Nashville, which is really exciting. And also presented at a couple of different conferences, including this one. So future plans, obviously, is just to continue to develop ways to attract customers, but, you know, really just to make sure that communities are aware of us and know that they can be buying fruits and vegetables from us if they want. Beyond that, it's the financial sustainability. We are a social enterprise, so it's one part mission, you know, being able to actually provide the service and, you know, change health behaviors, but it's also to be financially sustainable so that eventually we don't have to rely on grants. And so for us, what that looks like is to be able to pay the executive director solely from the operations of the market, and then obviously all the drivers of the market as well. We'd love if financially we could go beyond that and also support things like our community kitchen program, but to be determined. You know, with any social enterprise, it's going to take, they say, roughly 2 years to become financially sustainable, and then when you talk about a grocery store, you're working on a little bit smaller of a profit margin, right at 28%. So it's going to be a little bit longer than that for us, but we're getting certainly very close. Like I said, the national component to what we do, so just really helping other cities address food desert issues, and whether that takes on the form of a mobile grocery store or not, I think that's to be determined and is a lot city specific. But we are working with people in Memphis, Atlanta, and Dallas to do that. Research publications is a really big thing for us that we're going to hope to come out with soon. Like I said, we're really hoping to do the prospective studies in the coming months. But a lot of research has not been done on mobile markets in general. We asked around all throughout the nation to a ton of different mobile grocery stores or mobile farmers markets and things like that that did exist before us, and not a single one had any sort of research. And so for us, it's a big thing to, you know, see if what we're doing is actually having an impact on food purchasing and consuming, if it's sustainable and things like that, and to be able to share that knowledge with other cities who might be looking to the mobile market as a potential solution as well. And then obviously the long-term goal is that we don't exist at all. It's kind of funny to have planned obsolescence, but that's what we want. We want grocery stores to actually move into these neighborhoods to build a freestanding grocery store so that they're there 24/7 all week long instead of 2 hours a couple days a week, you know, if you can, you know, miss work or you're not at work or you're home or things like that. So again, the end goal is to bring grocery stores into that neighborhood. And a lot of that we think will be from our research that we can show that it's worthwhile and profitable because businesses are the ones that we're talking to. And so I'd just like to acknowledge all the volunteers and the professors and people throughout the Nashville community that have really helped us get to where we are. Thank you.